Welcome.
Hi, Sasha. Thanks for having me.
You are a historical fiction writer and an educator. Did the teaching precede the writing, or did your love for writing come before the teaching came into your life?
No, actually, my writing came, I suppose, in conjunction with the teaching. But I was a professional football coach prior to that, and then I took up writing.
Do you remember your very first writing experience?
Published or not published?
Both.
Okay, so I used to just delve into a little bit of poetry in that when I was an adolescent, but obviously never got published or anything. My first published novel came out about well, it's about 6 years ago now.
And you have authored a few books, and your latest book is Outback Odyssey. Can you walk us through how that came about and how, in what aspect is the autobiographical account?
Okay, so it's we had a referendum in Australia back in 2023. It was called The Voice, and basically the referendum was about giving First Nations people who've been living 2,000 years, First Nation people, an opportunity to have their say in the constitution. Anyway, to make a long story short, the referendum was knocked back. So that's sort of like, I thought to myself, that whole idea of living here for 60,000 years, being the first people to ever inhabit the country or the continent, and to not have a say in your own future, I thought was, that silence was very off-putting to me. And I suppose I personally went through a similar thing a number of years before that, when I actually coached the Australian National Paralympic football team. I worked for Football Federation Australia for about 10 years, and the Australian Sports Government, don't worry, I'll tie all this in a minute. The Australian Sports Commission decided to cancel the program because they said that they'd only fund teams that were in the top 10 in the world. And yet we were in the top 10 of the world. So I went public to the ABC and to various media organizations in Australia and overseas. It was in the major papers. I got a change.org list of about 80,000 people that wrote to the Australian Commission saying that they shouldn't cancel the program. Anyway, their decision was turned around, and the Australian government kept the program going. But as a result of that, I obviously lost my job because I went against the power brokers and went public. So a few years later, and I've been developing that program over a period of 10 years. I actually named them the Parry, built the program. Obviously, had staff, assistant coach, physios, all that type of thing. And then a couple of years later, they decided to do a documentary on the Pararoo. And even though I'd basically played a huge part in setting up that program, my name was just erased from the documentary. So it was that sort of like, I suppose the link is, I had that sort of like feeling of silence. I worked so hard for this program, just as many other people have worked so hard to get First Nations put into in had to have their say through the Constitution. And I just sort of like felt that empathy. And I suppose that was the spark that made me think about writing Outback Odyssey.
Or I should say, there were a few themes in your book, but one of them has to do with identity and belonging. Is that where it is inspired from?
Well, basically, it's allegorical, right? So the novel at face value, you would read it as a sort of like adventure, romance, historical fiction novel, but there's an underlying theme that sort of like took that basically talks about reconciliation, that idea of belonging, because the main protagonist comes to Australia because he was an orphan in England, back in England, back in the 50s, and it's loosely based on my father and Jimmy Brown. Anyway, so he comes to Australia because he couldn't go into the armed services. This is back in the 50s, and he doesn't feel like he belongs anywhere. He's in this huge country that he knows nothing about. He's left his native country, and then what happens is some First Nations mob or clan, as you'd call it, I suppose, takes him in, and through that you sort of like see the wisdom, First Nations people, their sort of like love and appreciation and links to the land, which is obviously a very strong part of their culture. And don't want to say too much, but through that, it's like it shows the tapestry of First Nations culture, what they have to give that we don't give them a chance to sort of like bring into the day-to-day Australian culture. And the wisdom and the tap's beautiful.
Because you are a historical fiction author, how much research goes into creating this world of history, which is fiction? Like, what part is imagination and what part of the research do you rely on actual history that took place?
Oh, look, a huge amount of research. I mean, I went into databases and read colonial papers that were written back in the 1800s. So it gives a very, very truthful idea about probably things in First Nations culture that people don't know about. And I was on an interview a few weeks ago, and Beth Hildenbrand said that she read the book, and she said, like, one of the things about it was a very good story, very good characters and character arcs and that type of thing. But she learned so much about Australia.
What is one thing about Australia that you want the rest of the world to know?
I think, I mean, the continent is so huge, and we get so many visitors and so many tourists. And yet, I don't really think they appreciate. They just see they just see the top. Just a minute line across the top of the country and First Nations culture. I mean, these people have been living here for 60,000 years, and they might see a couple of tourists. First Nations or Aboriginal dancing and that type of thing, but that's just the top of the iceberg.
Taking one
And
step back, you were British born and then you migrated to Australia. What in life unfolded that welcomed you to go to Australia?
well, my father's Australian, so he, as I said, the first part of it is loosely based on his emigration to Australia. And so there's a lot of I suppose a lot of Well, the first part of the story actually deals with his migration, the month-long boat trip and the stop-offs of the Suez Canal and all that type of the difficulties that he had to face when he first came to Australia back in the 50s, such as spending weeks in a hostel, being tested for tuberculosis and all that type of thing. It's provides a good insight into what it was like first coming to Australia in the 50s. Sorry, I can't remember what if I answered your question or not.
Absolutely. And focusing on the outback life and adventures, you've done your fair share of hitchhiking, sleeping in public places, meeting all different types of people. Have you ever had experiences where you felt your life was in danger or you wanted to be more fearless and adventurous? And that have you reached the peak of your outback adventures?
So I actually worked as a navvy, a railway navvy, which is basically a worker that travels in a mobile camp that moves up the track in outback Queensland. And what they do is they replace the wooden sleepers on the track. And you're in the outback, you're up in Queensland, it's 50 degrees, heading towards 50 degrees Celsius, flies everywhere. It was a very, very difficult, hard life. You come home and your hands would be, bloody and blistered and that type of thing. So, yeah, I suppose the novel has it's painted in the colors what I had or the experiences that I had out in the outback.
In your latest novel, Outback Odyssey, was it easier for you to write and develop a character that is a protagonist, or is it easier to create an antagonist?
Oh, I love a good antagonist. Oh, and the antagonist in this novel in Outback Odyssey is actually related to the love interest of Jimmy. He's her uncle, and he has a mental health issue. I don't want to give too much away, but quite often my novels they sort of like touch on various mental health issues. Not that you'd read about it, but just by getting to know the character, you would say, "Oh, okay, he's got some issues." And so Derek, the main and or the antagonist, or main antagonist. Oh, it was fantastic writing character arc.
When you crafted your characters for this book, do you craft them in the order that they come to you in Revelation, or do you work your book backward? You already know in your mind how it will play out?
Interestingly enough, when I write, I don't plan anything. I just start writing, and the story just seems like a movie moving in front of my eyes. And all I do is just transfer that movie onto paper, basically, or onto a computer.
So your writing
So,
flows like the river.
yeah. I never have writer's block. It just flows. And I think I'm very lucky in that aspect.
One of the topics that you touch upon is empathy. And for people who don't understand what empathy is, how do you define it as a writer?
Everybody knows what sympathy is, but empathy is basic placing yourself in another person's position. And you usually most of my character, even the antagonists, I suppose I can empathize because I've in most cases been in a similar situation.
How do you weave in vulnerability in your characters?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a growth, isn't it? When you develop a character arc, it's a growth, and sometimes people grow in a positive way, and some people go backwards. And I suppose that's something that, as an author, that I've developed over the years, is working on those character arcs to make them believable and to make the people believable.
As an educator, with your experiences with having students, what have you learned as an educator that translates into your craft of writing? Do you bring more of a thread of humanity? Do you bring more wit? How has that influenced your contribution to writing?
As a teacher, you have to be able to entertain, I believe, and because if you don't entertain, or if you tell lies, the kids know. And I think that's very, very similar to writing a novel or being an author. If you're not credible, and you don't say the truth, and you don't entertain, I believe just as a teacher, your lesson can be very dull. So my novels are just like the way I teach, I suppose. My novels have a lot of twists and turns. There's a certain sometimes there's a certain sort of like dark humor to them. They're very realistic. In other words, you when you read them, you're actually placed. It's almost like you're standing in the outback, amongst the gum trees with Jimmy, or you're swimming in a billabong with Amanda. So, and you look up and you see the red gum.
When you're writing female characters, what are some characteristics that are important for you to infuse in them?
Once again, there's got to be a certain amount of credibility. They've got to be probably most importantly, I think they quite often my female characters are quite strong. They're usually strong women, and I think people have to be able, especially women, have to be able to relate. And Amanda Olsen, the other protagonist novel, she has a very, very difficult time, and she's going to lose her station or her farm, and that's where sort of like Jimmy comes in. And I suppose Jimmy's sort of like just an 18, 19-year-old naive Englishman. So I suppose that he sort of like grows as a person and as a character through that. Through those difficulties, but through that he comes to terms with his own sense of belonging. And that allegorical thing is about him appreciating First Nation culture and accepting, being able to accept that idea of accepting First Nations culture. And what it does is, for Australian, it actually holds up a mirror to how holds up a mirror to colonization. It holds up a mirror to how First Nations people, not only in Australia but all around the world, have been treated by colonization, and what those effects are or were. So like these.
Because it is the Odyssey, will there be, is this going to be part of an unspoken trilogy in the future?
Well, my first three books were a trilogy. I'm basically waiting to see what the I suppose the popularity of this novel is in Australia. It's not an easy novel to read, because especially for Australians, because as I said, it holds up a mirror, and it makes especially Australians, but any like I suppose it applies to any country that has been through some sort of colonization, but it holds up a mirror to yourself for you to possibly think differently about certain things. Look, at the end of the novel, the book ends, but there's probably another few page it goes on to, I suppose, increase the idea that, yeah, that possibly could be another one, if that makes sense.
Yes. And for the people reading the book, it can lead to one change out of many things that it could possibly inspire. What would be that one change?
Oh, just be accepting of things that are different, you know. Try to, I mean, I think Australia is a very, very, what's the word? It's a very conservative country, right? And there's especially sort of like with power brokers and governments and that. I suppose the main thing that I'd like for it to come out would be for people to not be afraid to think differently. And if the novel can get people to open their eyes and appreciate certain things that they didn't appreciate before, then I've done my job.
Focusing on the writing process, how long did it take to write Outback Odyssey from the time you conceptualized it to when you launched it?
About 2 years. So I have a new publisher, Historian Press, which is located in the US. So about 2 years, 2 years. But obviously the hard work in the marketing and you know, being on shows and that.
I've heard a few great writers mention that the writing part is not the challenge for them. It is the part of bringing awareness to their craft.
Oh, look, I find the writing part. Oh, you know, like if it takes you sort of like you know, a year and a bit to write it, and then obviously you've got to go back. I suppose the good thing about the fact that I don't plan any is that I can change things and put, you know, twists and turns in there that people aren't expecting. But yeah, two years, and then obviously you've got you know, your editing and, you know, cover design and all that type of stuff. Yeah.
You have experience working with publishing companies. For writers out there listening, what guidance do you have for them? How do you know you're partnered up with the right publishing company? And when they review your book, and if they offer critique, how do you balance maintaining the message of your book and considering the critique too?
Oh, look, I don't read reviews to start off with. I'll give you an example. A European director contacted and about doing the screenplay for it, and I'd already written the screenplay, although it was my first attempt, so yeah, probably needed a little work. And he said that one of the issues with the screenplay is that there's too many sort of like various countries involved in it. You know, you've got Egypt, you've got Australia, you've got England. It'd be very, very expensive budget. So he said, what I suggest, just start the screenplay from when Jimmy gets off the boat. And that was fair enough, because you know, I think the I mean, the first part of it is sort of like you know, a good background to what happens. But you know, the main story is from obviously when he gets off the boat and ends up in the hostel and all that type of, and then gets sent out to the outback. And I accepted that, but then he said, look, I'd like to get another person to sort of like rewrite the script. And I had a look at his pitch deck. I didn't let anybody rewrite it, but I had a look at his pitch deck, and it was very, very different to what I envisaged, right? So in that case, I wanted to stay true to the story, and I said, no, I think your pitch deck is missing part of it. So he said, okay, I'll rework it, and he did that. But yeah, getting back to your question, look, it's not easy. It's not easy. Don't take the reviews, if you get a bad review, too seriously. I had a review once where particular reviewer wasn't for Outback Odyssey, one of my first, gave me a bad review, and then I looked her up and had a look, and the only other review she'd given was about I think it was Russian tractors or something like that. So yeah, look, it's a very fickle business. And stay true to yourself and the point that you're trying to get across.
You did touch upon the staying true to yourself compared to when you came out with your first book to now. Is there any other critical lesson learned?
My other three novels, the trilogy, are good historical fiction, romance novels set you know, back in the 16th, 17th century. The important thing about this novel is two things. Firstly, I wanted to write Australiana, and secondly, I wanted the novel to mean something. So that's why it was very, very important for the novel to have that allegorical layer to it. And when you read it, you have to sort of like delve into it and see it. It doesn't sort of like it doesn't preach, put it that way. It doesn't preach. I don't try to preach. I just tell a story, and through the actions of the characters, certain things come across.
Celebrating you as an author today, do you have a writing productivity tip that could help aspiring writers out there?
Just write, just write. Enjoy it. If somebody said to me, 6 years ago that, or that I'd be a published author, I wouldn't believe them. The first novel I wrote, I started it, and my three children said, "Oh, Dad, what are you doing? You're not going to keep this up. Do something else." And I said, "Oh, okay, well." And now I look back, and they look back, and they see, they see articles in newspapers and all that type of thing. So yeah, it's been a pretty wild ride.
Well, it brings joy into your life. And as we start to wrap things up, do you have any new initiatives that you would like to share that people could look forward to? Any new projects, any new appearances so they could follow you wherever you go?
I have a website, paulrushworthbrown.com, and there's actually at the present time there's actually a world blog tour occurring for Outback Odyssey, and it's basically what happens. There's about it happens between the 27th of October and the 31st of October, and what happens is probably about 20 different authors on various days. They provide snippets of the novel. They provide snippets of interviews that I've had on TV and all that type of thing, and they basically give it a little bit of a review. So that's quite exciting. Having other historical fiction authors sort of like spoil your novel, and just radio and TV, just doing the circuit. Thank you for allowing me on your show, Sasha.
Well, it is a pleasure because I like to cover people of all different walks of life, all different genres, and I will say you're very level-headed for being a historical fiction writer.
Thank you.
And finally, you're welcome to share where people can find you, your website.
Okay, so as I said, paulrushworthbrown.com is the website. I'm on Amazon. I'm on Book Sirens, BookBub, just about anything that you can where you can sort of it's being sold in Waterstones in the UK. It's being sold in Booktopia in Australia, Amazon. It's on Kindle. So just about anywhere. I've got an author's page on Amazon, but most of it. You can find out about me and the novels on paulrushworthbrown.com.
And to just reaffirm what Paul shared, he is very much on the circuit. I highly recommend people to check different variations of his life journey out there. So, Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Sasha.